Hey, what's up, everyone? I'm Sarah.
I'm Liz.
And this is the It's Fine, I'm Fine podcast.
Okay, so today we have a very special guest. I'm really excited about her. Actually, it's funny. Our first guest was Sarah's roommate, and our second guest is my roommate. Our second guest is Julia Spandorfer, who I know from college and my sorority, and now we live together. And I will let her talk a little bit about herself and why we invited her on. So, Julia, tell us about you.
Take it away. So I am Liz's lovely roommate. I currently work in a hospital and I do research in psychiatry before graduate school. So I'm not a licensed clinician. I don't have professional training, but I do have a lot of exposure in helping people find different types of therapies and a lot of excitement about spreading the word to anyone who's willing to listen. So yeah. I'm really happy to be on here.
Yeah. So essentially, you're perfect for today's episode.
Totally. Yeah. I think so many people, because of what we've been talking about, have asked us, like, how do I even go about going to therapy? And for us at this point, for me and Sarah, it feels sort of natural. Like, if we needed to find a new therapist in a new place, I think we could pretty easily maneuver that. But I think what Julia can help us with is, you know, trying to help people who may have no idea where to start.
And Liz and I can only really speak from our own experience.
Totally.
You've studied it,
yeah.
And you've learned it.
Right.
So it's really good to have your perspective, and I'm excited to hear what you have to say.
Me too. Okay, so do we want to... Oh, we have to start out with Peek and Pit. So, Julia, you're going to start, if that's okay, because we let our guests start, because we're hospitable
here.
Our one guest. You're our second guest. We always let our guests start.
So what we do...
Usually we start with Pit because...
Okay.
So we do a Peek and Pit of the week.
And I like that.
Yeah. I told...
Oh, you explained it
before so she could think of it.
Got it. Oh, good. Good thinking. Hashtag
Peek of the week. Prepared. Hashtag Peek of the week.
First Pit of the week, and then we do hashtag Peek of the week.
There we go.
So kick it off.
So I have a pretty good Peek and Pit. They go together.
I think it's
something that... pretty much anyone who's spent time living in New York can really commiserate with. So I would say a big pit. I came down, giant crowd waiting for the subway, the 6 train, right at 5 o'clock.
We love the subway.
If you can commiserate with that. Pretty much everyone has seen it. It's one of the worst things about the city, I'd say.
Yeah.
I waited for 3 separate trains to go by, and
before
I could get on, it was a total disaster. Super sweaty. I was getting really anxious and stuffy. People were starting to get angry at each other, and of course, the train comes and no one gets out every time.
Yeah,
right.
But then there was an older gentleman and even older woman who started making jokes and. I started chatting with them, and everyone started being really funny with each other. And then when we all got on the subway, we were all looking out for each other and making sure we all got on the subway and joking together the whole time. So it was one of those only in New York moments where you just hate it and you love it at the same time.
For sure. Yeah, I think only that type of frustration could bring people together, like,
right.
In that way where everyone's, like, mutually – and you're all so squeezed like sardines that you're just like, we're going to be breathing the same air. We might as well, like, all be in this together.
I don't know
if anyone listening can hear my grin, but my cheeks hurt because it's so New York. Like, nowhere else in the world would you just be, like, waiting for the subway – everyone's yelling at each other in anger, and then 2 seconds later, you're all like, oh, the subway, and, like, everyone's laughing, like, wow, that was a really great pit.
Thank you, yeah.
I like the maneuvering from pit to peak. Like,
I love doing that. I did that last week.
Yeah, and just like Sarah said, it was so quick, the change in everyone's mood once this one guy started cracking jokes.
Very nice. That would have been me. So my pit and peak of the week... I'll start with the pit. As usual, my pit is that I'm starting to get sick, which is very unfortunate for me because I have a wedding to attend this weekend. And I have clients for work in on starting tomorrow through Thursday. I don't really enjoy being sick. I don't think anyone does. But especially with these, like, New York City subway experiences when you're just, like, I most likely got sick because someone on the subway sneezed on me or, yeah. like, you know, breathed. So that's definitely the pit. However, the peak, you know, I'm just going to bring it all back to the podcast. And my peak of the week is right now. And I'm really enjoying recording. And, yeah, I really love it.
So my pit is, I think I'm very fortunate that, like, a lot of people have started to follow me on Instagram and, like what I have to say and enjoy, like, what I wear and stuff. But that naturally comes with people who, like, just are mean to me online. And that can be really hard. And I try to rise above it and be strong, because I know that, like, if you're coming at someone from, like, the internet, that's really a reflection on you and not on me. But it can still be really hurtful, because just, like, I'm a sensitive person, and I try to be nice so that I don't have to deal with these obstacles of mean people. Like, I actively sometimes am too nice, because I don't want to, like, ever put myself out there in a way that would allow people to be mean to me. But they are sometimes, and I think it's just challenging, because I try not to address it and, like, clap back, because I think that that's not a good use of my energy. But it just can get to you and wear you down. But my peak, sort of related, I talk a lot about Lizzo on this podcast, and she actually has talked a little bit about, like, trolls. And
they were saying she has actually talked about me.
Oh, she, well, we are both Lizzo.
One day.
So, one time, seriously. Maybe she'll come on the podcast. I don't know. At Lizzo. At Lizzo Be Eating. At Sasha Be Flutin. So I finally got to see her in concert, and it was just magnificent. Like, I've never been to Radio City, in all fairness, but...
You've never been?
No, this was my first time. So that was really special, but it was, like, I knew, based on the energy of everyone there, like, it was just it was an experience. It wasn't just a show. Mm-hmm. And that's really rare. And there are some shows that... There are some artists that can do that at Jonas Brothers. But I just was so impressed by her and, like, her message and her... She's just so talented, but also, like, a theatrical person who just preaches self-love. And I love her. I love everything that she's doing. And that, like, her message and her music, like, really carried me through that time of, like, when I was dealing with trolls. So I'm very, very thankful that I had that experience.
Before we kick it off, I just wanted to... Not that I want to get back into your pit, but I just want to say one quick thing.
Sure.
Is that... Sometimes with more Instagram followers allows other people to think that the person behind the screen is no longer human. They're just like a figure.
Right.
I know with a lot of celebrities, like, people tend to think, like, oh, well, they have millions of followers, so anything I say is not going to get to them.
Yeah.
But, and not to say, like, well, you're famous now, so, you know, I'm going to, whatever, but I'm cutting that out. What I'm trying to say is that I think people write things because they want to get a reaction out of you, because it's either out of jealousy or they're starting to see that you're getting more followers and they're like, well,
they want to, like, pick you apart.
They want to start picking at it. They're like, well, she has a lot of followers, so I'm going to get in there and I'm going to say something, because, you know, I don't like that. And it's, you would never do that to someone with 10 followers.
Right.
You would just never do that, because you know they're going to see it and it's not kind.
Yeah.
So, and that's just straight on bullying, whereas these trolls, quote unquote, think that you're never going to see it.
Right.
And they want to get to you.
Right.
So the intentions are not always purely because they don't like you. They don't even know you.
Right.
You know?
It's a weird, the internet is a weird place.
The internet is a weird place. Anyways, follow us.
Yeah. Follow me at Lizite. Please be nice. Okay, so... What we want to talk to Julie about today, and what we're going to hopefully have subsequent episodes about, is therapy. We've gotten a lot of people who have reached out to us talking about their anxiety and other things that they're experiencing, and some of them don't even know where to start when it comes to therapy. So I think that from Julie's perspective, working around clinicians and working in labs with that deal with psychiatry and psychology, she can really help us sort of navigate the technical stuff, which I'm really excited about. So we got a couple questions, and
which was very exciting.
That was really cool. A lot of people engaged and had really awesome questions, and
totally
ones that we're going to use as a guide for the episode,
and ones that we all probably felt at some point.
Totally.
You know, I know that some of the questions resonated with me before I started, but we'll get into it.
So to orient everyone on this episode, we are going to kind of break it up into sections, all from deciding to go to therapy to finding a therapist, and then later Sarah and I are going to kind of talk about our experiences within therapy, whether therapists are right for us, because mm-hmm. I think we have a lot of experience in therapy, so we can talk about that.
So the stages before and then the stage after.
Exactly. So with deciding to go, when do we decide on therapy rather than talking things out with loved ones or using your own techniques? Like, when's a good time that we know, okay, maybe this is for a professional?
So I think that it would be great to hear about your individual stories.
Okay, yeah.
But what I will say is anytime you think that you might benefit from talking to a professional, that's a good enough time to go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be in the middle of crisis. In fact, like, it can be a lot more helpful if you go before mm-hmm. a moment of crisis so you can work on prevention strategies and strengthening everything that's good in your life before just sort of untangling like a mess that might be existing in your life.
Yeah.
You can be more proactive and you might get more out of it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I actually think it can be really hard if you're going to therapy for the first time, like for grief purposes, or if you're experiencing like a breakup or a divorce, because when I have gone in the midst of like, you know, dealing with my parents' divorce or custody, it can be challenging because they're trying to get to like these very basic problems, but also trying to break down like the root of them. And it's hard because then that means you have to spend a lot of time there trying to find solutions to these very time-sensitive problems, sort of. And mm-hmm. I think if you are kind of being proactive about therapy and seeing someone when you think you could use these tools in your life, it will actually help you a lot more.
I think that when I first started going to therapy, it was in crisis mode. And while that was very helpful for me, over the years, I stopped going and then I started with someone new. And I found that when I started with someone new, in times when I was actually okay, but more of as a preventative thing, it's really nice because you're able to talk to them about your day-to-day life. And then when you see some of your old like patterns coming up, you can kind of just like attack it and nip it in the bud before it goes anywhere that you don't want it to go.
Yeah.
And you're kind of just like, hey, I'm starting to feel anxious about this one thing. Like, can we talk through it? And she or he will give you tools to help you through it so that you're better equipped to prevent crisis than you were the first time.
Exactly. That's a great point. Yeah.
Okay.
Another good time to start thinking about going to therapy is when it's affecting your sleep, or if you feel like your mood is really different than it usually is and things are just interfering with your
like basic
your day-to-day life.
Everyday things.
Yeah, and your relationships. Yeah. And
okay, so I've made the decision to go to therapy. Where do I start? What are my resources?
Yes.
Can you walk us through that?
Yeah, because I think that someone might say, I want to go to therapy, but it's so daunting.
Yeah.
They're like, where do I start?
Totally. So I think one place to start that is really natural is if you have insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Going to your insurance website or calling your insurance provider and looking up who the therapists are in your area. Mm-hmm. However, they'll give you a giant output of tons of therapists. It might be hundreds. And all of that information might not be totally up to date, and you might not be able to sort it sort of by the preferences of what you're looking for, whether it's by degree or by orientation, so the style of therapy, or maybe you want to see someone of a certain gender or age. And then from there, what I would do is just Google those names,
mm-hmm.
see if they're part of a private practice, see if they're part of a hospital system, see if there's like a nice user-friendly website where you can contact them. Just take that list and start Googling.
Okay. Can you touch on if you don't have insurance?
Yeah. So if you don't have insurance, and then also if you do have insurance, another great place to look are websites like Psychology Today,
mm-hmm.
I think is the biggest one at this point. And there's tons of providers, I think, in all over the country, all over the United States.
Mm-hmm. I like ZocDoc, too.
ZocDoc's
good.
ZocDoc's good. And I think that, like, every day there's new websites sort of those style coming out.
For sure.
On those websites, you might be able to sort more easily by things such as, like, gender or by orientation or age, just like I said. Mm-hmm. But therapists are working as salespeople,
mm-hmm.
so you might be biased toward what they want you to see and like, their ad. It can be really interesting and informative to look through and learn about people's different styles.
Absolutely. And at least know that there's like options. I think it can feel like, where do I even go? Where do I begin? I've never even thought about therapy. So like, are there even people out there for me? So I think it can be reassuring to know that there's all types of different people.
searching by your insurance provider, searching by Psychology Today and ZocDoc, those can be really helpful. If you don't have insurance, there are some other options for you that might be lower cost.
Mm-hmm.
You want to look for the keyword sliding scale. So you might Google sliding scale therapies and then your location, because that means that you can pay sort of based on your income level.
Mm-hmm.
And
wow,
therapists,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. So therapists would be willing to accept all the way from like $20 to like $200 based on how much you can pay. And people who are sliding scale, they can either be in private practice, they can be in community mental health centers, they can be in outpatient clinics. But that's a great keyword to use if you're looking to pay less.
Sliding scale.
Yeah, sliding scale.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and so with those types of therapists, you might be able to negotiate and like say, like, this is how much I can pay. Would you be willing to accept that with a therapist? Some more good places to look if you're looking for lower cost mental health treatment would be university clinics, which have people who are training to become psychologists, and they have lots of supervision within those clinics. So you might search like local universities near you. In New York, we have Columbia, we have St. John's, we have Yeshiva, we have Pace. So it might not even be the biggest universities in your area. They may have smaller ones with great psychology training programs. And there, because they are student clinicians, they can be a lot more affordable.
Mm-hmm.
and charge maybe even like $20 a session.
Wow.
And often there's a wait list, but there's usually someone who's like a reception intake person, and they can put you on a list. So it's not like you're just trying to get a therapist on the phone,
yeah,
which can be really difficult with private practice. Then you can also look in other training institutes. Yeah, universities, training institutes, training clinics, things like that would be great things to search for affordable therapy.
I think another resource that I found at certain points when I was looking for a therapist was just going to my primary care physician. If you, your primary care physician is someone that you trust, they can direct you to a psychiatrist, who we can talk a little bit more about that, because those are
different
people who can prescribe medication, yeah, to you. But typically, it's been my experience that good psychiatrists have a ton of people that they work with on the back burner,
totally,
because they understand that not all patients can pay for a psychiatrist every time they need therapy.
Right.
So they might, those people might have social workers,
yep,
PhDs, a ton of people that they, right, can, they can refer you to. So I think going to your like trusted medical person can also be a very helpful tool.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's, sorry to interrupt. That's exactly what I did. Like when I first started seeing a therapist, and she was also a psychiatrist, and that was, I was just fortunate to find someone that wanted to do that could prescribe but also wanted to do talk therapy with,
mm-hmm,
me. I feel like that's not as common.
No, it's not.
I'm fortunate enough where my job, it offers insurance, which has allowed me to find a talk therapist somewhat, not, I wouldn't say easily, like I definitely had to do my research to find someone that I could talk to for therapy, that was under my work's insurance. But a psychiatrist has been pretty difficult for me to find within my insurance that can take me within the month. So it does take a bit of planning, and they are just different for different purposes. So
yeah,
I do, yeah, want to make the distinction between a psychiatrist and just,
yeah,
like a social worker or whatever.
Even a PhD who practices psychology cannot prescribe medication, right?
Yeah, yeah. So I think that, so there's tons of different degrees that your therapist might have.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's another thing you want to do your research on. There's tons of websites that would explain to you the difference of each degree and what might be the benefits. I can run through quickly.
That would be great. Please do.
Yeah. So an MD, so someone with a medical degree, would be a psychiatrist. Just like Sarah said, they can prescribe medication, but often the visits are shorter. And they don't do, like, full talk therapy. I think,
yeah,
that's rarer.
Right,
yeah.
So just like Liz said, they might work in conjunction with a psychologist or with a therapist who, and they're just doing med visits,
right,
once a month, once every 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a great place to go if you're looking for medication. And then just like Liz said, going to your primary care doctor, sometimes they have people who they can refer to.
Right.
And if you totally don't know where to start and you're already hooked up to a primary care physician, then asking them is a really smart thing to
do. Yeah, it seems like connecting your like primary care to your psychiatrist. Like, your doctor should definitely be in contact because I'm struggling right now to find a psychiatrist to refill my medication. It's been a whole thing. But just the other day, I was at talk therapy, and she was like, let me take the reins right now and, like, connect you with this. And she called them directly. So it's really nice when they're, like, in contact working together. So you don't necessarily feel like you have to, like, stressfully run around, look for all these different doctors. Like, people can, like, the doctors in your life can work together for you. Yeah. So just starting with one, like finding a talk therapist or finding a psychiatrist or starting with a primary care physician can help you, like, find connect and meet all networks. Of your needs.
Yeah. I think that when it works, it's great.
Yeah.
I've had friends who have mentioned they're interested in therapy to their primary care doctor, and they'll just get, like, a handout, and, like, they'll call them, and they'll all be waitlist. So sometimes it's more helpful than others, but it's a great place to start.
Agreed.
So just going through other degrees, another degree that would be able to give you medication and then also potentially provide some talk therapy would be a psychiatric nurse practitioner. Sometimes those can be more affordable than psychiatrists.
It's kind of like when you go to the OBGYN, like, you can see the medical doctor and it might be a little pricier or harder to get an appointment, but when you see a nurse practitioner, they're a little more accessible and I think often cheaper, but they can pretty much do all the same things. Mm-hmm. Yes. That's been my experience.
The nurse practitioner is the person that prescribed me my medication.
Yeah.
Right.
And then, psychologists are people with a doctoral degree, either a PhD or a PsyD. Mm-hmm. Those are people who have had 4 to 6 years of training. Often they've done research in an area of their specialty, and they might cost a little bit more than master's level clinicians, and they can have tons of different degrees, the master's level clinicians. So that can be a licensed social worker, licensed mental health counselor, family therapist. There's tons of degrees there.
Like LC.
Yeah. And those might be a little bit more affordable, but psychologists and social workers, they cannot prescribe medication, but they might be more inclined to do talk therapy with you.
Mm-hmm. And in our last episode, we mentioned that talk therapy might be a good place to start before you even know if you need medication.
Yeah.
Would you, is that an accurate thing to say?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think it can go either way. When I first started therapy, my therapist was saying that you might benefit from medication, but I couldn't do that without having spoken to her first. So I think it can go either way. Why are you interested in psychology?
So I got interested in psychology, I think, like a lot of people do, in their intro to psych class and their abnormal psychology class in undergrad. I've worked in a lot of different labs, both in undergrad and then after college. So I've worked in a lab that looked at anxiety and depression. I worked in a lab that focused on kids thriving in schools. I've worked in a lab that did clinical trials for anxiety, PTSD, and grief. Now I work in a lab that focuses on mental health services and community settings for kids and families. Mm-hmm. So I've seen a lot of different types of psychology research and I've been exposed to a lot of different types of treatments and also theories of treatments. I've seen it from the smallest scale of, like, what does anxiety look like in your brain? Then all the way to, like, how do we spread the most effective treatments for different mental health problems into communities where people have little access to it.
Mm-hmm. While we're sitting here talking about how many resources there are, it's, like, apparent how challenging it can be for people to find good care at any sort of affordable price. I think a lot of the care that I've encountered here in New York is good but incredibly expensive.
Yeah.
And I think, like here in one of the biggest metropolitan places in the world, it can be very hard for people to find a good therapist. So it's just something to think about. I think there are so many options, but I do think, like, the work that you're doing and the work that a lot of your peers or mentors are doing is really great because you're trying to make something that seems niche to people more accessible.
Yeah. So what do? You don't have $20 for the sliding scale. You don't have the time. You have to want to start, like, as small as possible, small steps. So one thing that you could do is you could explore different clinical trials that are going on in your area. So just like in medicine, there are researchers who are testing out how effective different treatments are for different mental health problems. And there's a great website called clinicaltrials.gov. You can literally type in anxiety, New York City, and you can see the studies that are recruiting in the area. And then you can just contact whoever the contact person is and see if you'd be a good fit for the study. So that's not a perfect option for everyone.
That is really cool. We will definitely post that and like some of this other information on our website, I think probably on our Facebook page or wherever we can.
Yeah.
We can. But
our website too.
Our website too. But
it's fine on my and all the places.
Yeah. So I can give you that link. But clinicaltrials.gov is interesting. You can read about what the treatment looks like. So it might be a medication versus a placebo. Mm-hmm. It might be testing out different types of psychotherapies. It might be testing out an app. Yeah, there's lots of
Talk space.
Yeah, right. Yeah, there's lots of options there.
That's really cool.
Yeah, yeah. And then you get paid for that for the most part instead of...
So instead of paying for therapy, you pay me to fix my problems.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
Yeah, so that's great, but there are often pretty stringent exclusion criteria. Huh. So like maybe you're not the right age, maybe your level of anxiety doesn't quite meet the threshold.
Imagine that. Not anxious enough.
I know.
Oh, man.
So I sort of worked on the other end recruiting people for these types of trials, and it was really tough to tell people, like, I totally see that you're struggling, but we do need you to be, like, pretty severe for this study. And that's just the nature of research. So, yeah, that's another thing that I like to spread the word about. A lot of studies are always looking for participants.
That's great.
Especially if you live in a metropolitan area near academic medical centers. There's tons going on, and there's a great website, clinicaltrials.gov, for researching there. There's a lot of great apps for relaxation, and there's also a lot of great apps that teach you different cognitive behavioral strategies. So that is a theory that a lot of clinicians practice. I think there was a question on here about what to do if you move around a lot.
Oh, yeah, I love that question.
Yeah, yeah.
There was someone who asked because their husband is in the Army, and so, like, they can't necessarily find a continuous care person.
So then maybe mobile app would be best for that person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I haven't had any experience personally with Talkspace, and...
There's an app called Calm, which I've tried. I've actually tried... I think I tried Headspace at one point.
Headspace is like meditation, but Talkspace is like there is a therapist and you can either message, FaceTime, I believe. Just it's all through your phone.
In the past, I heard of this app called Mend. I heard about it actually on a Bachelor podcast. But it's not for anxiety necessarily. It's for your breakups. But it's literally a whole community of people going through breakups and they just like, you know, you go on the app, there's all these different people writing about their own experiences.
Yeah.
There's articles, and then every day the app checks in with you to see how you're doing. And then it forces you to first you journal, then there's like someone literally talking to you, then there's like a message thing, and then there's the community. It's crazy. Like I only tried it for like 2 days. It wasn't right for me, but it could be right for someone else.
So just going back to, I think we had the person who wrote and said that what do you do if you're moving around a lot? There are mobile apps like
Talkspace,
where you actually do have a therapist.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
And you do have that one-to-one connection, but it's all through your phone. And then there's also people who do telehealth, so not necessarily through an app, but they might be private practice psychologists, or they might be working in a hospital setting. A lot of providers will also do telehealth, so finding someone maybe that you can see in person who would be willing to switch to a video chat format when you leave is wonderful. And I know a ton of people have had success doing that.
I think one thing that Sarah and I can probably talk about a little bit, but I would love to get Julia's perspective on. Someone asked how you deal with the initial anxiety of finding a therapist and like going to a therapist. So basically, I completely understand this. While I am familiar with therapy, like, okay, I've decided this is something I need, it can just be really scary to call an office and be like, hi, I would like to see this person. And they're like, well, what are you experiencing?
Yeah.
And you're like, you know what I mean? So dealing with those, like, dealing with the anxiety, the meta anxiety of first seeing a therapist, is there anything that you've seen on your end that you think can be helpful for patients? Or can you talk a little bit about, you know, some of the anxieties maybe you've seen as someone who works in a clinical setting?
Yeah. So I would say that just like both of you have said, it can often be a long process to find someone who has an opening and find someone who's also a great fit for you.
Mm-hmm.
And just going into it, knowing that, like, it might take a while, and the first person to say, no, we don't have availability, no, we don't take your insurance, or who doesn't get back to you, that does not mean that it's not the right path for you, or that it's a good option for you. And knowing that, just like finding a job, like, you sort of cast your net widely.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. So that's not my...
Right, because it's not like the first one you call is just going to be the right one for you, whether that's like the right fit in terms of therapy or like the office. Like, you know, they're humans too, and they can't...
It's not a perfect system.
It's not a perfect
system. For the patient or for the therapist.
Exactly.
And I would, you know, I might draft like one Word document saying what you're looking for. It might be just a paragraph, not a whole Word document. But
I think people get nervous about even saying over the phone.
Yeah.
Like, hi, like, you don't even need to, like, delve into all of the things. You can just be like, I'm experiencing some anxiety, or I'm experiencing this, that. Like, is there anyone I could speak to who is available?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So I think on Psychology Today, if you're emailing them, or if you have your email address from the insurance provider, or if you get a recommendation from a friend, which is another great way to find someone.
And some of them do, like, free consultations.
Yes.
So, which is awesome, because it helps you, like, see if there's chemistry.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Just know that they hear it over and over again. They're not going to judge you. They're not going to even probably remember you, because people who are doing intakes, they just hear it all day.
Sorry to use the OBGYN metaphor again, but, like, it's the same thing with a gynecologist. It can be, like, a little bit. I know there might be some gentlemen who listen to this, but I think a lot of them are women, and I think men can also, like, probably relate to this concept.
Based on our analytics, it's 4% men.
Okay. Well, either way, we're trying to be inclusive, and I think this can resonate with men too, because if they had to go to a doctor who practice something similar for men or whatever, gender non-conforming individuals.
I hope that all individuals listen to this podcast. That's truly the goal.
The metaphor just being, it can be like, or if you're going to get a wax, like, it's very similar. Like, it's very intimidating.
All you,
like,
men getting your waxes.
Whatever they may do. So they, like, if you're going, it's like, wow, that's so weird. This person is, like, very, like, being, it's very intimate. That's, like, a good word to use.
Yeah,
it's intimate. But they do it all day, every day. And so I think that that's just something to consider with therapy as well. It can be very vulnerable, but you have to understand that they should be experienced in intake, and they should be experienced with dealing with people who are across the map.
If they're in the field, 9 out of 10 times they're interested in it.
Yeah.
So it's like, they didn't sign up to sit and judge people all day. They signed up because they either, you know, I'm sure you, Julia, are interested in helping other people, and you're just like, I like this. Like, I'm interested in learning about the science and understanding more, and, like, your goal is not to just sit around and judge people. Your goal is to, like, help the world.
Yeah.
Which is very commendable.
Yeah. And I think that even just talking to someone and sharing just a little bit can sort of be rewarding, and like, oh, I did that. Like,
yeah,
I called them. It worked out okay. Like, the worst that can happen is they say no and you try again. So just being, like, gentle with yourself and just keep trying. Another thing that Sarah just brought up is a lot of therapists, if you ask them, will be willing to just talk on the phone for 10 minutes about your goals, and about their orientation and about what they can do for you.
Mm-hmm.
And just having that chat can be a really nice way to see if they're a good fit before you jump into that first appointment. And maybe you get to that appointment and you realize it's not a great fit. And
then
you feel guilty that you already, you know, told your whole life story. So probably should just go to your second appointment. But, like, you have a feeling it's not great. That 10-minute consultation can get rid of some of those avoidable problems.
I've had 4 therapists in my life, not because I didn't like them, but because different reasons, like I moved or they moved, whatever it may have been. But each time I had a consultation with them before to see if it was a good fit, And every time I found the consultation so helpful because it gave me a better understanding of like how they were going to be able to help me. And it's kind of nice when, you know, okay, worst case scenario, like I don't have to talk to them again.
Yeah.
This is just like a little intro to see if it's a good fit. And that can kind of take the pressure off because it's not like, okay, this is going to be your therapist for the next 2 years. It's just like, it's just a 10-minute chat. If it doesn't work, fine. You don't have to talk to them again. If it works, great. Like, you guys can keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this might be a good time for me to get into just, like, the different therapy styles. The therapy style that I know the most about, that I've been around the most, and that I will admit that I'm biased toward, is cognitive behavioral therapy.
Or CBT.
Or CBT, which we'll call it, and what you'll hear a lot of people call it. And that is like a very actionable form of therapy that focuses on giving you tools, lots of time. It's not like a very long, not ending relationship. It might just be 3 months or something like that. But it is focused on changing your thought patterns and interrupting them to help you think in ways that are more productive and less harmful to yourself.
That's what I've been doing.
Yeah, and that's a really like good and succinct way of putting it. I liked it.
Yeah,
all.
I really like that too.
Thank you. It's my whole job to just explain it.
Can I give an example of like what that might look like? What that's looked like for me in therapy? Mm-hmm. Like a good one that I've worked on is like I cannot be late for work because like it gives me so much anxiety. It makes my like chest beat. It gives me anxiety, and so working through this problem so that the anxiety is lessened. And so if I'm struck with a moment where I am late to work or if I need to be late to work, that I would be able to deal with it. So my distorted thought pattern might be, if I get to work late, then like I'm going to get fired or I am going to have the worst week ever because I'm late for one morning. And then the way that you can readjust that thought is sort of working through, okay, well, have you been late before? Or what would you say to a peer who might be late to work one day? You would probably say something like, well, it's one day and you can make up the work in that day. So that would be like a really good way of meeting a thought and trying to adjust it so that it's not detrimental to you. And also something cool that you can do is like, well, why don't you try being late one day? That's sort of like, what's it called? Exposure therapy, which isn't necessarily what a therapist would recommend, but it's a very interesting idea. Okay, so we're going to take a small anxiety that you have and we're going to address it head on. Try being late one day. Tell me what happens. And that can be something that a therapist might work through.
Yeah. So with CBT, there's been a lot of research showing that it's super effective for every type of anxiety disorder, as well as depression. But so a nice example with anxiety disorder is it can be centered around exposure. I have social anxiety. I'm afraid to give a presentation in my class. And what your therapist might do with you is work you through a series of harder and harder exposures. So it would start like, okay, give me your therapist like a 1 minute presentation on a topic. And then it might be you pull in like someone from the office who they don't know. And in that therapy room, they give like a 5 minute presentation in front of that person. Mm-hmm. And then you might keep working your way up until you go to a full conference room filled with 10 different people who you don't know and you give a presentation in front of them.
Wow. And I love that.
I love that too.
Yeah. So during each one of those exposures, they're called, the therapist is right there. They're asking you how you're feeling. And then after that session, it's really focused on what did you learn in that moment when you were giving that presentation and you were afraid, how were you able to conquer those negative feelings and then improve your behavior for next time and realize that it's not something that is so scary.
So scary. For me personally, I have a fear of like losing friendships or losing relationships in my life. So I get so anxious before I even lose anyone that it drives me to the point where like I'm so scared it's gonna happen before it even happens. And that's what causes me anxiety every day. And so through therapy, we've had to like drill. I haven't necessarily done exposure therapy because
that's hard to
just take people out of my life like that. And that's also like cruel, but but like we've talked over and over and over what would happen if you didn't have this, like what would happen if this person said, I don't want to be your friend anymore, what would happen? And I have to come to terms and say, like, I guess nothing, you know, like what would happen if this, like, because a lot of the times I, by saying that, I realize, like, why would a close friend of mine out of nowhere for no reason say, I don't want to be your friend anymore? Like, it's not like very logical of me to think that, but the therapist has to say over and over and over, like, okay, like what would happen? How would you feel? Like, and we kind of like putting me in the mindset of like, what if my worst fear came true? Like, what would happen?
It can really mitigate kind of that, like the late to work thing. Anxiety.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And then once you kind of realize that it is more of your anxieties that's like manifesting this, or no, sorry. Once you realize that it's really just like your brain creating the scenarios that's not really happening, and that if that were to actually happen, it wouldn't be as bad as you think it would happen, you start to like be okay with the possibility of that might happening. Did that make sense?
Yes. Yeah, it did.
Okay.
Do you want to talk?
Was that on topic, by the way?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
100%.
Do you want to touch on the other types of therapy?
Quickly? Yeah. So there's a lot of other different types of schools of thought, and a lot of different therapy techniques will focus on mindfulness and relaxation. Some will do a style like acceptance and commitment therapy. And then there's more classic like psychodynamic, which might be more long-term relationship with your therapist. And just talking about things that are on your mind and things that have happened to you in the past. And it's a little bit less action focused.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think that probably people who haven't experienced therapy before or who it might be foreign to would probably picture therapy as like lying on a couch and talking about like your relationship with your mom. Like it's very Freudian, the kind of images that are
like,
put out.
Like sit on this couch, lie down, wear this blind.
Yeah. Right.
Speak to me about your dream last night.
Yeah. Right.
It's like, or it's not really like that.
A modern take on therapy that I've seen was in the show Big Little Lies, which has also gotten some controversy for that style of therapy, but I think it's actually like probably a little bit
kind of the worst.
Yeah,
like, what, people really too.
Well, both. Like people didn't like her because
people
I think
like season one.
No,
it's the therapist.
I'm thinking people didn't like the way the therapist was.
I think people who are in the field of therapy or who are exposed to therapy thought it was a little bit too. Well, you may be able to touch on this better. It was a little too aggressive and like involved. And also she was everyone's therapist, which was like a little bit weird.
I don't remember so well. I don't remember her being everyone's therapist, but I do remember her being like, what's going on at home? Like,
right.
But why are you still in
this? Why are you still with Perry kind of thing was the vibe that I got. And I do think, though, that might not have been the best therapist, but that was a little bit more of an accurate reflection of what you can see in terms of like one-on-one talking and talking through current problems and your way of dealing with them, if that makes sense. But not advocating for that type of therapy, but it just might be a bit more of a modern depiction of it. I think something that's important to note is that while Sarah and I might have more experience in therapy and thus feel more comfortable talking, there are probably a lot of people listening who wouldn't know where to start. And one thing that Sarah and I can probably talk a little bit more about in upcoming episodes is the actual dynamic of therapy itself. And I do think it's important to note that a good therapist will ask you a lot of questions and help break those barriers for you. So if you feel uncomfortable and don't know where to start, they can really guide you. It's not supposed to be like you're delivering a monologue and they ask you how you feel at the very end. I know that we threw a lot of information your way, but we're going to include some helpful graphics and some of the information that we shared. I know Julia is going to help us with that. And we're also going to talk a little bit more about this in the coming weeks. So I wanted to thank Julia for being here.
And I also just want to say that like any questions that are sent to you that you feel like you don't know about,
I would
be so excited to draft up responses to.
Like awesome.
You can give me as many questions as you want. So rewarding when someone actually gets through and makes it to therapy and finds it to be impactful and improves from it. There's nothing better. And that's what I want to do with my life.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow.
We actually got a couple of messages saying like, thanks to your podcast, I'm going to therapy for the first time. And that was like,
we got a different one.
Literally chef's
today.
Kiss.
Chef's kiss. Like the best.
The best
that's
message
I've
ever
honestly
gotten.
All I could have asked for with this podcast. Like,
if nothing else. We have other goals.
We have other goals
we
too.
We don't do this for the money.
But that was the last
talk
episode.
Space.
Yeah,
at talk space at Debbie, at Colin, at Headspace.
at Zoloft, like, just sponsor. Yeah.
but at Psychology Today. but yeah, if nothing else, the goal is really for people to be more okay with mental health, talking about it, and kind of just being like, what's going on?
Yeah, I like that too. Like, open the option to exploring.
Exploring.
I am going to quote my stepfather, who is for sure quoting someone else because I love him, but he did not come up with this. He always says, a life unexamined is a life not worth living. That's got to be like Einstein or Freud. Is that Freud?
He did not come up with
that. I know.
I thought you were saying, like, maybe he
was. No. That's got to be, like, literally Freud or someone. But
I think it's Socrates.
It's totally like an ancient Greek.
What is it? An unknown?
A life unexamined.
A life unexamined.
If you just look up that. Oh, yeah. Okay, so.
Who is it, Freud?
It's Socrates at Julia. the unexamined life is not worth living. So that's actually a Socrates quote, but it's very important. And, you know, like Julia said, there are non-traditional forms of therapy that you can do. There are things you can do to sort of explore your mental health before jumping into therapy. And we're very honored to kind of talk through and brainstorm those on this podcast. And if you ever DM us, we can be a resource for you, and we can connect you with things that have been helpful to us.
Mm-hmm. And Liz and I are no therapists, but, like,
we've been through things, so we can help connect you.
And we enjoy hearing, like, I enjoy when people are like, hey, I don't know where to start here, but, like, this is what I'm feeling. Mm-hmm. Like, it really feels good.
The last thing I'll say is there's therapy for everything. So there's therapy for chronic pain. There's therapy for insomnia. There's therapy for all emotions from feeling sad to deeper depression. There's therapy for a fear of dogs. There's therapy for panic attacks. There's everything out there, grief. And
you don't have to feel like you aren't, I don't know how to say this,
deserving, but you don't, because other people.
Exactly. Oh, you don't have to feel like your anxiety isn't, like, enough to go to therapy. It's like, even if you love your life and you are not feeling anxiety, it's like, why not talk about it?
Yeah.
Why not talk about it? You know?
I think the first thing that my therapist said to me in therapy was, like, feel like the way that you feel matters, and you can sit here all you want and compare your anxieties and your life situations to other people, but that is not going to help the way that you feel. So you need to treat your feelings as real, and we can address them from there. So I think that's a really important thing that you can actually learn in therapy, but...
And everything is relative. Just because your best friend is going through something really difficult doesn't make your problems any less more difficult for you, because you're not going through that. You're going through your own life.
Yeah.
So don't compare to others. Don't feel like you don't need therapy because other people who go to therapy might have more, like, severe life things.
Circumstances.
Yeah.
For sure.
Circumstances.
And I think that's one of the things they would talk to you about too.
This has been so much fun. Thank you so much, Julia.
Thank you all so much for listening to this week's episode. Feel free to provide feedback in our Instagram DMs. Remember to subscribe, rate, and review on the podcast app. You can follow us at It's Fine, I'm Fine Pod on Instagram. You can follow me at Liz Height.
And me at Sarah L. Sassone. That's N with, like, Nancy.
Okay. And with that,
it's fine. I'm fine.
It's fine. I'm fine.